Broadcasting live from the Liberty Express Radio Network, eFactor.com presents School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here's your host, the guy that believes anyone can be an entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion. Jim Beach.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. Thanks for listening today. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you had a great week and big plans for the weekend. Today is Friday, June 20th, 2014, and I have a great, great show for you today. We have the Executive Edge author, Carrie Preston. She's going to talk to us about the skills that you need as a leader, the things that you need to develop in yourself and in the employees around you to build that perfect team. You know, everyone says you got to have the team as an entrepreneur, and Carrie is going to talk to us about that. She's also written a great book that I love, The Biggest Mistakes I've Ever Seen, or something like that. I think that's just fun. We'll talk to her about that as well. And then from Legal Shield, I have the new president of Legal Shield Solutions, James Rousseau. He has been with some other fantastic big name companies that you have heard of and is now with Legal Shield doing the B2B part of Legal Shield. You know, so many companies out there are looking for cool things, cool benefits that they can give their employees that aren't going to cost a lot. And Legal Shield is one of those. You know, I didn't know much about Legal Shield, but I do know Fran Tarkington here in town. Of course, he was the old football player from the Minnesota Vikings in the 60s and 70s. And then he was on That's Incredible. Remember that TV show? Anyway, Fran lives here in Atlanta, and I've run into him a couple of times, and he is very, very, very big on Legal Shield. His company, Grow Small Biz, is part of the Legal Shield package, I believe, and he tested it out and said, we called the lawyers. The lawyers are good lawyers. This stuff works. And so I'm really excited to talk to James about how your company can maybe get involved with Legal Shield, or how you could become a Legal Shield salesperson and go out there and make some real money for yourself. You know, as entrepreneur want-to-bes, as many of our listeners are, you might not have an idea of what you want to do, and Legal Shield could be a fantastic solution for you. So I'm excited to talk to James about that. He'll be with us in the second part of the show. Before that, though, I want to comment on something that is totally outside the purview of this show in some ways, football, the Redskins, the fact that the Patent and Trademark Office took away the trademark for the Washington Redskins football team. Now, I want to stress, I could care less about sports. I don't watch, participate, not part of my life, just don't care. I don't care what the Redskins' name is either. I don't find it that offensive. I'm not Indian, of course. And so, but to me, it's not a big deal. And I've seen the polls, and I think I know what percent of the American population is concerned about it. I've seen polls of Native Americans and what percent of them are concerned about it. And it seems to me to be a very small percent. I am, though, very worried that the government's going out there and simply taking away trademarks because of what they feel. That's not right. And I probably think the Redskins should change their name. I think it's probably a bad name. But for the government to impose that on us, it's just really scary to me. What's this difference than saying Coca-Cola is too sugary? We're going to take away the patent on the formula for Coca-Cola, and you now have to make it this way. It just seems to me as a bad step, a bad move toward all business, small business, medium, anybody, I think should be very concerned about this. And again, I don't care about the name. I don't care about the sport or any of it. I'm just concerned that government's doing something that it shouldn't be doing, and it could hurt small business. You know, we never talk about politics on this show. I'm very politically involved, but I just don't think that's relevant to this show. But this is an example of something that is relevant, right? Government coming out and stepping into the world of business and saying, you're not going to do this. Well, you know what? If that's the practice, if it, you know, offends 5% of the population, and therefore we should change the name of something because of 5%, well, half the names in America are going to have to be changed then. You know, think about this. Here in the South, we have a lot of, you know, neighborhoods called something plantation, Old Street Plantation. And I asked my African-American friends, do you want to live there? And they're like, Dude, I got off the plantation. We fought a war to get off the plantation. My ancestors died to get off the plantation. There's no way in the world I'm going to live in a neighborhood called Plantation. I get that. And to me, a developer should have more sense than to name a subdivision Plantation. But we shouldn't force them to change it. Let the market decide, for goodness sakes. We'll be right back with Carrie Preston to talk about Executive Edge in just a second.
School for Startups Radio appreciates you listening. Please check out the 5-star rated School for Startups book on Amazon, which argues that anyone can be an entrepreneur when you learn a new way to think about creativity, risk, and passion. Go to schoolforstartups.com to see our online learning center, and you can connect with the host, Jim Beach, on LinkedIn, send him an email at james.beach@att.net, or follow him on Twitter @entrepreneurjim. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Thank you so much today for being with us. I greatly appreciate it, and I hope that you are finding this time to be useful. I think you'll really enjoy my next guest. Her name is Carrie Preston. She is the managing partner at Image Dynamics. We will learn all about that. She has written a couple of books, including one that I love the title, You Did What? Biggest Mistakes Professionals Ever Make. We do want to talk about that. But here in late May, she has a new book coming out called Enhancing Your Executive Edge. Actually, you can already buy it. It's already up now. How to Develop the Skills to Lead and Succeed. And I'm looking at the page right now on Amazon. It's well-reviewed and selling really well today. Carrie Preston, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. I am concerned, though, that your first book, You Did What?, is about the stupid things that I did and you secretly didn't tell me that you were writing a book about me. What are some of the funniest things that you can point out or some of the craziest things from that book? And then we'll move on to other things. But I just love the title.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I have to say, Jim, I have made all the mistakes, and I just simply wrote about them.
So it's an autobiography.
Not really, but you get it. But people typically don't notice what you do right. You don't get that, oh, great handshake. You know, what they notice, or what they sometimes will talk about, is the things that you do wrong. So that You Did What really just helps you with the business protocol aspect on trying to make sure that you know the rules, and you know where your name tag goes, you know how to handle your handshake. You know, I've had people show up in meetings with, you know, Tupperware of, like, horribly smelling food, and there's a CEO in the meeting that they have such limited access to. So it's just those details that you want to eliminate, and some best practices.
Excellent. Well, we all need that. But let me tell you a little story, Carrie. This, I had no intention of telling this story, but it's interesting. I used to be a professor at a big downtown university, and I had a student, and he called me one day and said, can you come and meet my boss? And because he was a student and a young kid and everything, I didn't really pay it much attention. And so I showed up in short pants, flip-flops, t-shirt with a like 18-month-old baby on my hip, Carrie. And okay. It was my baby, by the way. It was not one that I just found on the street or anything. And so showed up for this meeting. There were 12 of them. 3 of them had flown in from India to meet me. And I was like, oh, well. 2 hours later, the female CEO, a mother of 9, coincidentally, Carrie, said, best baby I've ever seen. He hadn't bothered anyone, hasn't said a peep during the whole meeting. You're hired. I got the job because of the baby. What do you think about this strategy?
You know, I have to say, I'm also the youngest of 9, so I can relate to the woman, the CEO, hiring you in some weird way. But ultimately, authenticity and being yourself really does work to your advantage in any business situation. The difference is you come with clout or credibility based on your past experiences, and you are a professor, and, you know, so there's some exceptions to all the rules. So in that situation, you just did a great job with your people skills.
Well, I did have amazing ideas and presented. Yeah, every time I spoke, gold coins fell out of my mouth. That is true, Carrie. But anyway, let's talk about your new book, Enhancing Your Executive Edge, How to Develop the Skills to Lead and Succeed, by you and your good friend, Kim Zoller. What can we do? What are some of the steps? What are some of the skills you point out in the book?
So how to lead, you know, is really, with enhancing your executive edge, about having your career be by design and not by accident. So, you know, there's five buckets to the book, which one is all about your own self-management and being aware, social awareness of others. We go through personal branding. And, you know, companies spend millions and billions and billions of dollars on marketing their products. So we help anyone reading or listening how to build their own personal brand. We go through details on communication and presence, and then all the components of executive edge, as well as just leading others. You know, a leader is only a leader if they have followers, right?
Yep.
So you really want to make sure that we share the strategies on how to motivate, persevere, you know, and have that extra edge, that excellence that can really set you apart. And so often, you know, when I first started, I worked for Calvin Klein Cosmetics, and I was there for almost 10 years.
My favorite brand, all of my cosmetics, Carrie, I never use anything but Calvin.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be happy to hear that. Well, I noticed during my tenure that, you know, I was in management development and training and working with people and helping them succeed and grow, but I noticed so many conversations about people that were due for promotions or trying to get to that next level. The conversations were always revolving around their lack of professionalism or how they lost credibility or, you know, some of the visual images and their presentation styles. It wasn't always about the technical side. And, you know, I think we know that job success, obviously, you need to be smart and technical, but that kind of comes with the price of admission. So in order to set yourself apart and get to that next level, you need to shine. And so that's really what this book helps you do, is just gain that, you know, next level of expertise.
Okay. What about the fact, or the, not fact, the belief by some that leadership is a quality you are born with, and you're either a leader or you're not. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, so I'm going to challenge that. That's not my belief in any way, and I think research has really shown that your IQ is something that you're more or less born with, and that your EQ, your emotional intelligence, which is the interpersonal side of things, can be developed. And, you know, with practice and application, you know, you really can grow your leadership skills.
Okay. All right. What about if you're just super shy? Can a super shy person become a leader? What do you say to that person, Carrie?
So I think, again, back to, you know, the self-management and social awareness. A super shy person, and let's face it, they may hate people. They would much prefer to be introverted and work and get their job done and go home. When you're getting to the next level, you need to get those skills and put them forward. Now, that doesn't mean when you go home at night, you shut the blinds, put on the TV, or listen to the radio, I should say, and flip up the recliner on the lazy boy. So what happens is, you know, you have your work style and your home personal style. With your leadership skills, you really need to develop and use that extra energy throughout the day, getting sharper, being more professional, learning about others, asking questions, because ultimately you won't have followers if you don't show that vision, that passion, the
right
people skills.
Okay. This is such a hard thing to develop, though, for a shy person or just, you know, anyone. The, you know, skills are just really hard. So can we, you know, talk a little bit more, deep dive just a little bit? You said that there were five buckets, and the first one was awareness and becoming more, you know, better at self-managing yourself. How do you go through that process? How do I take an inventory of Jim Beach? And what happens if I hate the results? But anyway, how do I take the inventory?
So how do you take the inventory on others as far as recognizing or on yourself?
Well, let's do both. Let's do both, but let's start with ourselves. Let's be narcissistic and start with ourselves, Carrie.
I love that. So, yeah. So, I mean, the first piece of it is self-awareness is you need to learn about, you know, your own behaviors. And the way you do that is you find someone that can help give you feedback. I mean, you can go to a meeting, you can deliver a presentation, but you have blind spots, or some people I call have partial blind spots. So they may have defensiveness, they may be a blamer, they may be a know-it-all, they may be a poor listener, they may be a one-upper, you know, and so ultimately, in order to build self-awareness, you have to become aware. And so one thing I recommend is always, you know, start noticing things that annoy you about other people or some of the blind spots you think other people may have and make a list of those, because sometimes you can start to say, you know what, I do know that I'm getting a little defensive when someone shoots down my idea.
No, I'm not.
And that's where it becomes partial.
Don't accuse me of that. Don't you start with me, Carrie.
We're going to do that later. You hold on. But ultimately, you know, just, you know, there's really two things. One is have a goal. Write down what it is that you're after as far as, you know, your self-awareness. I want to be perceived as, because how you're being perceived has a lot to do with all five of the buckets. Again, finding someone to get feedback from is the second great strategy. And, you know, we all get written up for our reviews when we're working for an organization, but there's also people that are peers or colleagues that we trust or we have a relationship with. And I recommend saying, you know, I'm working on developing my perceptions, you know, how I'm being perceived by others. If you happen to notice anything, I would love to get some feedback for you, you know, from you.
Wow.
I think those two things, as awareness, you know, and as well as trying to work through recognizing some of your blind spots, is a great way to start. And the book will take you through all different ways of what sabotages you, how to be more professional, how to build your credibility. You know, I think that speaks volumes when you do consistent work, when you do project an air of confidence, when you say you're going to do something and you do it, and you show that, you know, hunger and that fire in your belly. We call that like executive maturity, where you're out to get great business results and you can separate the emotions and other the things that annoy you about others and focus on the logic.
Is part of emotional intelligence hiding your emotions?
You know, it's so funny. I have to tell you a quick story because this just happened with a client. And the answer to that is no, it's not hiding your emotions. It's managing your emotions. But I had a client call me and she said, Carrie, I just received an email and the woman was so offensive and the tone was very cutting. And basically she had called me and asked me to do something. I said I would get to it. I didn't do it at that exact moment. And someone else sent an email that got out before I did what I was supposed to do. But I, you know, I ultimately did it, but her email was like, you said you were doing it, you didn't do it right then. And she asked me what should be the strategy. In that situation, when I read the email, the woman was really being a bully. And the tone, there was a big undertone. And I said, in that situation, you need to state the facts. The facts are, I didn't send it out as soon as we hung up. I did send it out within an hour and a half, which is great business practice.
Totally acceptable. Hour and a half, totally acceptable.
And the woman ultimately, when she stood up and she didn't, you know, fake her emotions, she clearly responded. The woman that was being the bully responded back, I am so sorry. My intent was not to, you know, be that inappropriate or offensive. I was just stating you had mentioned you were going to do it. And it all rectified itself. But that's a great example, Jim, of how I'm not asking anyone to not be who they truly are or not say things or not hold difficult conversations, because we don't want anyone to cave. We want you to be smart and maybe not go and respond too quickly without preparing and get that logic involved and those facts involved. So if someone says something and it makes you want to scream or smack them and that's not appropriate, you simply say, let me make sure I understand. Okay, this is what we're talking about. All right, I need some time to get back to you on this. And you are emotionally in charge and you manage. You don't let someone get the best of your emotions, because let's face it, we've all said things or sent things via email that we wish we could take back. And once those are out
there. The unsend button. I want the unsend button, Carrie.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. All right. Can you give us another bucket?
Okay. So another bucket we can talk about is just overall communication and presence and how you are, you know, putting yourself out there as an executive.
All right. I do a lot of public speaking, especially at the Chamber downtown. I'm one of the judges for the Business Person of the Year there. I like to wear black leather year round, black leather jacket and jeans when I almost always, that's my uniform. Is that sending the inappropriate message in the double button down Southern tie starched pinstripe suit world?
You know what? You bring up a great point. When it comes to your brand, your image, your presence, you need to have a goal of how you want to be described when you leave that meeting. And does that fit with what you're selling or what you're representing or what you stand for? So I'll ask you, Jim, is that who you are? Is that what you want to be remembered by?
I have several responses. First is it's distinctive. So instead of saying the bald guy, they go the guy in the black leather jacket. Everyone there knows me as that. And so it's sort of like a calling card, a signature. I'm known for that. Number two, my personality is the entrepreneur guy, right? I don't do the big corporate Coca-Cola, UPS stuff. I'm more the entrepreneur guy, the guy who's the renegade, the maverick, you know, that kind of is the image that I have down there. It's not necessarily true, but you know, that's what they think. They're always concerned when I'm speaking that I'm going to say something inappropriate that's going to offend somebody, but I never do. And they always invite me back. And I've been a judge there for 5 years now for Business Person of the Year. They love me, but I'm always right on the edge and they know that. But that's what I'm trying to project. So how does that work overall as a package?
You know, I think that you should be who you want to be and how you want to be described and defined. And to your point, in that entrepreneurial spirit, that works. And it sounds to me like you have a plan around that. You're very pointed in your decision with your wardrobe. And I would not change that. I think one of the areas when we look at communication and presence that we ask people to really consider, and there's some tools in the book that will help you with this, is mapping out, you know, what are your differentiators? What are your competencies? What are your brand's, you know, descriptors from an appearance perspective? And, you know, to your point on the bigger guy, you know, the corporate side of this, you really do need to make sure that you're representing and fitting within the corporate culture that, you know, if you're representing them. But so I think that there's two ways, you know, from a presentation skills perspective, you also need to know, you know, what message you're trying to deliver, who your audience is, kind of those five W's, who, what, when, where, why, and be strategic on what you want to be remembered by and described as when you leave the room.
I think that's critical. Yes. I think we have to pay attention to that as entrepreneurs. All right. Can we get another big bucket? We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left.
Yes. And, you know, one of the other big buckets does have to do with, you know, that business protocol, the details of Executive Edge. And I actually work and train a lot of different organizations. And one of the things that I notice with leaders that are about to move up to that next level is when it comes to the Executive Edge, they will technically forget sometimes, I should say, you know, to modify and be agile. And so they get rigid or they get stuck or they have an idea and they want to force it through. And, you know, so again, building your executive image is making sure that you have that drive and that discipline to listen to others, to really take the time to not always just tell, but also ask. And seeing problems as opportunities is a big one. I walk into meetings and someone will say, "Ugh, you're never going to believe what happened." I mean, you hear that, right? People be like, doom and gloom, negativity. And all of a sudden, you know, you can hear them say, "You won't believe this, 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 and this." But the reality is, here, you can start with that. You're never going to believe. Now, here's what my solution is. We need to come up with. Let's strategize. Because seeing problems as opportunities can really grow the business. And I think that's something when you look at business protocol and the details of Executive Edge. Yes, you want to be prepared. You want to be organized. You want to, you know, have a good attitude and share your values and ideas, but you also want to be the person that gets results. So to me, it's like three buckets. It's managing yourself, it's managing others, and it's managing the business. And that's also where you can get ahead when you can really take tough challenges and solve them.
Carrie, tell us about your business image dynamics. I think you've been working there or running it about 15 years. Tell us about that business, please.
So our business is all about collaborating with companies to help drive their business, you know, help their people and their process. And so any way that you can grow and develop your teams, your people, it is ultimately impacting your bottom line. One time someone said, what happens if I train all these people and they leave? And we joke, you know, what happens if they stay? And ultimately, if you want to develop communication skills, presentation skills, leadership, manage new hires to managers, we take your group and help them, give them the tools to succeed and do their jobs and manage that whole interpersonal side of things.
Well, fantastic. I love it. Your book has been published by McGraw-Hill. You don't get any more prestigious than that. So congratulations. How can people find out more about you, Carrie? Reach out, buy your book, all of that kind of thing.
So they can visit our website, which is www.idimage.com. We have a free assessment of what is my executive edge, and there's a website if you want to just type that in, www.whatismyexecutiveedge. You can answer a series of questions, and it'll tell you where you are. The book is available on, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's Carrie Preston and Kim Zoller, Enhancing Your Executive Edge.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope the book sells 400 million copies.
Oh, Jim, you are sweet. Thank you. You are an absolute pleasure. The time flew, and I really enjoyed our discussion, so thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for saying that. That was really nice. We'll be right back with more of the show in just a minute.
You're invited to join over 1 million entrepreneurs worldwide on eFactor. As the world's largest network for entrepreneurs, we provide our members with the right resources and connections to launch and grow their business. Sign up now for your free membership or make the most out of our network and become a VIP today. eFactor.com, the entrepreneur's wingman.
Hi, I'm Steve Strauss, USA Today columnist and author of the Small Business Bible. You know, I hear from a lot of entrepreneurs who want some help with their business. What do you do? How do you grow it? I've got the answer for you. Come visit our new site, theselfemployed.com. Everything you need to take your business to the next level. Learn about startups, e-commerce, technology. We have podcasts. We have articles. Anything you need. We'll see you at theselfemployed.com.
School for Startups Radio hopes that you will reach out to us if you need help with your business at any stage from concept to exit. Our online learning center at schoolforstartups.com has 80 hours of videos to help with every topic. Jim accepts all connections on LinkedIn, he tweets from @entrepreneurjim, and he responds to emails to james.beach@att.net. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Hope you're having a great day and that you have fantastic plans for this weekend. I am very excited to introduce you to my next guest. His name is James Rousseau, and listen to this background. You're going to be blown away. He was a senior vice president at a little company called JP Morgan Chase. You may have heard of it. After that, he switched to become president of Affinity Solutions at another tiny company you may have heard of called Allstate. And now he is the president of Legal Shield Solutions, which is one of the great small business opportunities out there. It's a fantastic product. I have worked with Fran Tarkington, who is one of Legal Shield's partners, and Fran swears by it, and I trust Fran. So anyway, but more importantly, James has a new book out called Success on Your Own Terms, 6 Promises to Fire Up Your Passion, Ignite Your Career, and Create an Amazing Life. It is out by Career Press. Very prestigious. You don't get any better than that. James, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jim. I'm doing great.
Well, we're excited to get to know you a little bit and find out about this. Let me start off with this, James. In some sense, you have been blindsided here. I'm going to throw a real curveball at you. We don't care about passion on this radio show. We think that passion for the process of being an entrepreneur, passion for the freedom that comes with it is enough. I don't care what you do, sell, buy, or you know how you make your money, as long as it's moral and mostly legal. I don't care if you're passionate, because I like to go to soccer practice at 2. So what do you, first of all, what do you think of that?
Well, I think down in there, how you get to that freedom is still important. And whether subliminal or intentional, people tend to try to find their ways to their passion, I believe, right? And the core of my book is about don't just, you know, bump into it or accidentally find it. One of the first promises I talk about is passion and actually trying to reach back into what it is, define it, and effectively chase it.
Okay. Is the fact that I'm just passionate about my lifestyle, is that good enough? I mean, I love my lifestyle, but I got businesses, James, that I could care less about. Is that bad? Am I waiting for a disaster?
You know, that's a good question, Jim. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't looked at it from that perspective, and nor do I profess to be a psychologist or any other pedigree that could opine on that. But I don't know if it's bad. I think if you're happy, and one of my points is around creating an amazing life, if you're happy in the flow of your life and things that are going on, I don't know if I could find a reason to say it was bad at all.
Okay, cool. Thank God, because I was getting really nervous there, James. I was like, oh, man, this is going to train wreck soon. Because I think I have an amazing life, and I think most people who would look in on it would agree, but I'm just passionate for my lifestyle. I don't really care what I do, what businesses I own. But anyway, let's move on to the book, take it a step further. You say there are 6 promises. Can you give us one of the promises and explain how that will lead to success, please?
Well, one is, again, the first one, pursue your passion. And, you know, one of the things I say is, you know, don't discount your dreams. And a lot of times when I'm talking to the audience, one of the things I ask them to do is kind of, if you will, close your eyes for a second and step back into 12, 13, 14, and what you used to envision yourself doing, what you dream about doing. And most of the times, those were things that weren't necessarily attached to money. It was just things you loved doing. So it could be cooking. It could be rescuing pets. It could be, who knows, cleaning up your block and being active in your community. And then something happens in our mid-teens, later teens that gets connected to, I got to produce an income, right? And when you get to that point, what often tends to happen with folks is you begin the chase of the dollar, right? And as some of us was proverbial rat race. And you alter your trajectory from passion to what's going to make me income. And then you find a lot of people, and I've been blessed to get wisdom from a lot of older folks who, even when you get in your 50s or 60s and you get close to retirement, you go, well, you know, if I'm going to retire, I'm not just going to retire. I'm going to reinvent myself and have a second phase, which is usually connected to their passion. So why give up those 30, 40, 50 years in between? The point I try to make in the first part of the book and in the first promise is pursue your passion from the onset. Be intentional about it. And again, kind of define it, be intentional, chase it.
I have a horrible impression of a lot of our young generation, James, the 20-year-olds, the 25-year-olds. I used to be a college professor for 10 years. I didn't think they had any passion. I thought they were adrift as a generation. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think, you know, I've got a 22-year-old son, right? And he just graduated from college 2-3 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And I mean to you for not having to pay for him anymore. In no way am I congratulating him. Just want to make that clear. Congratulations to you, James.
You know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I've watched him chase his passion of football for years and years on end. Now that he's graduated, he's going into another phase of life. And I think, you know, you get that jolt in reality hits you of, this one didn't work out exactly the way I expected. I got bills to pay. I got things to do. But the good news is he's not lazy, right? Now, to your point, I've seen a number who are. But some of that, sometimes, well, let me take a further step back. A lot of times we look at people from a distance and don't know the story behind the outer expression we see, right? We see them in a moment in time, but we don't know the stories. I mean, think of some of the folks on the street, unfortunately, are sleeping on vents. We don't know if they're a vet. We don't know if at one point they were a high roller in some regard or some respect, and, you know, they were part of Enron and got booted out because they lost all their retirement, right? We don't know what's going on behind people. To me, even with the young folks, I find that if you can engage them in a conversation and really probe around what's going on, you can usually find a nugget in terms of what excites them, what they really get excited about. And having access to what excites you, which in turn is usually your passion, is huge in terms of making a difference in how you motivate that person. Does that make sense?
Totally, yes. And I hope that's true. I hope that's true. I hope I just wasn't digging deep enough in these kids. Let's move on back to the book. Can you give me another promise?
Yeah, one of the other promises is, I'll bookend it just in case we run out of time, is practice philanthropy. So the sixth promise, the one I end up on, really talks about giving back, right? So how do you position yourself and always give back and do it in a repeated way? Make it a habit. And a lot of times, I don't know about you, Jim, but you often meet people, and it almost seems like people are looking for some reciprocity, right? Like, you do this for me, I'll do this for you, or balance a trade almost, right? I'm going to evaluate relationships and what I get as well. And I kind of go into this notion of just give. Just go ahead and give. So give back your time, your talents, help somebody else come along, and share your experiences and whatnot.
Yeah, James, this is very un-American of you, James. This is not an acceptable strategy. This is crazy talk, James. You're bad-mouthing yourself here. Well, yeah, I make fun of it because it's so rare to see this actually happen. You know, the Japanese culture, the entire culture is based on counting. You know, I did this for you, so, you know, tactfully, I will remind you until you repay the favor. There's entire words in Japanese for that. And in the American culture, I think we still see the same thing. Aren't we a nation of counters? Scorekeepers?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. No doubt we are. But I guess I would say to your point, it doesn't happen. One of the things I do in the back of the book is I think a number of people who've been instrumental across my career, right, that I believe made impact. And I probably named at least 10 people with a short snippet of why. And all these people, I didn't give anything back to them. They invested in me for whatever reason, and in most cases, in an intangible way, sharing their experiences, their wisdom, helping me, you know, at the Y in the road, as it were, pick the right path based on, or at least give me some insight as to what could happen on those two paths based on their experiences, right? Those things, to me, are hugely important and invaluable, and none of those folks asked me for anything in return. I'm a product of my faith, being a hard worker, but a lot of people who helped me down this journey.
Right. Do you think it's more important to give time or money?
Time.
Why?
Experiences. So the richness of the experiences. So here's one of my philosophies. Every time I walk past a person, I try to remember that there's a wealth of experience and knowledge that person has. It's almost like a supercomputer. Each person walking by is a supercomputer, irrespective of what their age is. Think about the places they've been, the things they've gone through, the successes and failures and lessons, all stored in somebody's head. Each person has that. It's totally up to us whether we decide to try to tap into it or not.
Okay.
Money doesn't buy that. Money can sometimes, of course, buy you access and give you a comfortable life. But if you ask me to choose between the two in terms of what to give, I think it's your time.
All right. I will give you that being philanthropic will fire up your passion and will lead to an amazing life. But how does it ignite your career? Or am I just being a counter?
Well, no. I think passion is like fuel, right? So, you know, if you can only go 50 miles or 200 miles on a full tank of fuel, passion almost makes an endless supply. people who operate in their passion. So back in the day, you know, I used to watch like Greg Louganis at the Olympics, right? The diver, Martina Navratilova playing tennis and people like that. And you go, well, how do they do it that hard, that long?
You're displaying your age there, James. You're making yourself sound old with Martina Navratilova references.
Hey,
my
listen,
goodness. What about Anna Kournikova?
I was a kid. I'm 42. But, you know, my point is, even Andy Reid from the Eagles, you know, I'm from Philadelphia originally. One of the things I love that he said is, you know, after he got fired from the Eagles, that same year one of his sons died. No child, no parents ever lose their child. Month or two later, he went right back to work and took the job at the Kansas City Chiefs. And then that year, I think they were undefeated the first 9 games. He said, you know what I attribute it to? My passion for the game. I love this game. It is what I was made to do, what I believe I was gifted to do. It's what fires me up every day, sends me to bed at night, happy. My passion for this thing. And that carried him through all those catastrophes, right? So that's my firm belief is that people who are operating, quote unquote, in their passion have an unbelievable supply of energy and fortitude and persistence.
I'm sorry, I had to write that down. There's a Twitter moment right there for us, James. give me another promise.
Another promise is parlay your platform, promise number 4. And what that is I say your platform is like your station in life you've achieved. It's your network of influential friends, your coworkers, mentors, bosses. Sometimes we look around and go, you know, kind of, woe is me, I'm by myself, and you're never that, right? And now it's easier to see it, whether it's your LinkedIn profile, and you can see all your connections, or people who are following you on Twitter. But there's always some people who are help you with a platform, meaning people you can reach out to who are willing to exchange ideas with you, make a phone call on your behalf, endorse you, give you help. For example, now I'm looking for a car for my wife right now. We're new to Dallas. We've been in Dallas 4 or 5 months. Sure, there's a number of dealers I see, but I share my problem because I think car shopping is a problem personally. I hate it. I share with a number of people I bump into that I work with because people will give you free advice. Hey, you know, if you're going to do that, you should go to this dealership down here because my experience with them is X, Y, Z. Or, hey, you should go check this out. Or, hey, you should go use Auto Trader because I found this feature that does X, Y, and Z. So to me, it's about when I say probably your platform, it's about using all those tools and resources and connections to make sure you're achieving your goals, whether they're short-term tactical goals or longer-term strategic goals. And that's, you know, I'd say that in the personal sense, it's even a bigger play inside an organization because I think when you're in a corporate world, and you mentioned some of the places I work, which are just behemoth companies, right? Being a part of the ecosystem is extremely important in advancing your career in those big companies, right? And you have to use the ecosystem wisely. And so the people you've established connections with are your platform in terms of moving through that ecosystem. And if you don't use them, I would say you're probably going to run a slower track because accomplishments alone don't necessarily move you up the ladder or through the organization. It's accomplishments in addition to people who are going to vote for you and be your sponsors to help move you forward.
Do promises number 4 and 6 not contradict each other? Number 6, we're giving. Number 4, it sounds like you're talking about taking.
No, they work hand in hand. Freely give and freely ask for help. They work hand in hand. But the difference, Jim, is there's no reciprocity, right? There's no reciprocity. And it may sound a little idealistic, right, in terms of how this can work, but it works. It absolutely works.
Okay. All right. Give us one more promise. We have time for one more promise, James.
One more. I would say perform to progress. And, you know, one of the things I think we often are always looking for is perfection. And perfection is fleeting, in my personal opinion. I used to have the head of HR, J.P. Morgan Chase, used to say it, John Farrell. He would go, you know, if you're on the Yankees and you swing, I think, a 600, right, you're a star. You know, sometimes inside of our company, you could do a 950 and you suck because you're not perfect, right? And we've done this to ourselves, whether through TV and media and how we expect women to look in terms of their size and models and things like that, these images. But actually, I believe it's more important to perform to progress, to see yourself move from point A to point B to point C, and watching how that marries up against your short-term and long-term goals. right? It's a chance to also be honest with yourself about where you need to improve, right, and kind of course correct, but also give yourself a pat on the back every now and then. So the whole concept, that's promise number two, is really perform to progress. Don't set yourself up for failure and huge disappointment because you don't perfect it on day one. Make incremental steps to your success.
All right. I love it. James, I hadn't, you and I didn't talk about this, but go ahead and convince the entrepreneurs who are out there listening but are looking for something to do to give Legal Shield a real look. Sell us on it. How is this so cool? What are the benefits of it? Not for the consumers. Don't talk to consumers right now. Talk to entrepreneurs who are looking for something to do. And again, I just want to reiterate that I have several friends who do this, so I'm a little bit biased, but you know, Fran Tarkington, NFL Hall of Fame quarterback, certainly a very respectable businessman. He's quoted in Forbes and all over the place all the time. And he actually hired some of your lawyers and tested it. And that's why he was your spokesman for so long, or not maybe yours, but you know, tangentially associated with Legal Shield. Mm-hmm. I think his product is called Grow Small Biz or something
Grow
like
small,
that.
Grow Small Biz, yeah. We work with Fran, and Fran's quickly become a friend. I've been here at Legal Shield from January. So I'll tell you, I transitioned from Allstate to Legal Shield in January, and the principal reason I came was that I thought it was a very unique opportunity to give people access to the legal system who normally wouldn't have it. There's $100 billion that's spent annually in, you know, quote-unquote legal services, and it's usually by a population of folks who can afford their own attorney. There's a whole other population of people who usually either helped by a public defender, or they try to be their own attorney in the moment in terms of, you know, I'm going to look at my general contractor contract, or I'm a small business owner, I'm going to look at these agreements and contracts, and I think I get it. But why be a small business owner and, you know, try to be, you know, chief cook, bottle washer, open the store, close the store, et cetera. So for me to leave and come here, it was to set up Legal Shield Solutions, which is our business-to-business, if you will, part of the company, and has a number of divisions. And my principal job is to help us distribute our product through businesses and intermediaries like brokers, et cetera. But the biggest thing I would say is, if you know, in terms of opportunity to be a small business entrepreneur, Legal Shield is, it's a wide open market. Different than, you know, property and casualty insurance and commercial insurance and other things like that. In those markets, you have to steal share from each other because they're not as many new entrants in terms of car drivers, et cetera. This is a market that is pretty new, again, with a $100 billion market cap, if you want to think of it that way, or market opportunity. And collectively, those of us in this market are still less than 5% penetrated. So 95% of the market's open. That's point number one, I would say. Two, different than any other network marketing company, and I won't name names, but you don't have to carry inventory. So you don't have to fill your car up with a bunch of cosmetics or things like that. You are helping sell a service that is highly differentiated, and it's a service provision through our attorneys. And we work in a capitated model, which means we have a law firm in every state. Those law firms are paid every month as a part of our subscription service from our members, and so they're extremely happy, and we have very high quality scores in terms of customer satisfaction. We use the Net Promoter Score system for those that are familiar with that. The third thing I'll tell you is that we have 300,000 associates today, and that number continues to increase. And within that pool of associates, we have a lot of people making 70,000, 80,000, six-figure incomes inside the company. So, you know, great product, excellent customer service reputation. You don't have to carry inventory. We have wonderful training systems to help new associates get started, and people are making good income, which allows them to have some of the things you mentioned, Jim, earlier, which is time freedom, right? The ability to establish a book of business that becomes your book for lifetime. And that's the other thing I should mention. As long as you're on the rolls as an associate, it's your book of business, and you can will it to somebody in your family as you get older and ready to retire, et cetera. So it's a commitment to building a business for a lifetime.
What about for a unemployed 22-year-old college graduate?
It's an excellent opportunity because it's a low buy-in. My son actually just started doing it, and he's looking to do some other jobs as well, but he decided to become a Legal Shield associate as well because he thinks it's a great opportunity. He's looking at some other opportunities, again, which I won't name, but when we walked him through the value proposition, how easy it was to make a sale in such an open market, and the commission plan associated with it, he couldn't help but say, I need to look at this more. And as he looked at it more, he got convinced that he should do it.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. I love hardworking people passing on the gene and the drive to other generations, the youth. Fantastic. James, I love it. I've had a great time getting to know you and finding out about your book, Success on Your Own Terms, Six Promises to Fire Up Your Passion, Ignite Your Career, and Create an Amazing Life. Other than going to Amazon and buying that, how can they get in touch with you, reach out, and learn more about you, circle you, follow you, all of that stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The easiest way probably is to go to my website, which is jamesrousseausenior.com. So James, RousseausSR.com. And you can go there. You can sign up for my Thought of the Day. I do a Thought of the Day every morning. I've been doing it for 14 years now, where I send a e-blast out every morning with a quick thought.
I would have run out of thoughts after 14 years, James. I only have about 4.5 years of thoughts.
I find them all over the place. All right, Jim, I keep a heavy inventory now. But you can sign up there for that. You can track what's going on with the book in terms of speaking events and things like that. You can obviously click and follow me on Twitter or visit my Facebook page. But everything kind of centralized on that site. So I would invite folks to really visit the site and make the tools available to themselves.
Fantastic. James, thank you so much for being with us today. I hope you sell a billion books. And let us know if you have an update with Legal Shield. Do you ever want to come back on the show? We'd love to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day, and we'll be right back with more of the show. Oh, happy weekend, James. Have a good weekend. Oh, excellent. We'll be right back with more of the show in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Steve Strauss, USA Today columnist and author of the Small Business Bible. You know, I hear from a lot of entrepreneurs who want some help with their business. What do you do? How do you grow it? I've got the answer for you. Come visit our new site, theselfemployed.com. Everything you need to take your business to the next level. Learn about startups, e-commerce, technology. We have podcasts, we have articles, anything you need. We'll see you at theselfemployed.com.
You're invited to join over 1 million entrepreneurs worldwide on eFactor. As the world's largest network for entrepreneurs, we provide our members with the right resources and connections to launch and grow their business. Sign up now for your free membership or make the most out of our network and become a VIP today. eFactor.com, the entrepreneur's wingman.
If you are enjoying the show and would like to learn more about Jim's philosophy of low-risk entrepreneurship, please check out the School for Startups book on Amazon. Over 50 reviews have given the book 5 stars. It argues that anyone can be an entrepreneur when you learn a new way to think about creativity, risk, and passion. Full of stories of low-risk entrepreneurs, School for Startups is a great read.
I want to thank Carrie and James for being on the show today. Really appreciate their time. I have a copy of Carrie's book here, and it looks fantastic. I am going to try to spend some time this weekend reading it. And I love Legal Shield, too. I have looked into this company. I know people who are doing it. One of my best friends is doing it. If you don't have a business right now and want to be an entrepreneur, Legal Shield is a great first step towards your journey. And I just love the idea and appreciate James being on the show. By the way, if you look up James Russo on YouTube, you'll find some great videos of his son playing football. It's pretty impressive. Good job on being a daddy, James. Thanks a lot for being with us today. I hope you enjoyed the show. We have got ten fantastic guests lined up for next week. You will not want to miss a single second of it. I hope you have a great weekend. Go out there and recharge your entrepreneurial batteries. Get ready to fight hard next Monday morning. We'll be back Monday. Take care and have a great weekend. Bye now.